Big Bad Wolf.
You want to know what I think? Here's what I think. Boats are the perfect investment. People notice shoes, it's that simple. All those check cashing places are crazy. Crazy convenient. It's true, you are what you drive. I'm guessing you probably drive a Kia. You want to know what I think of the new iPhone? Ridiculous. It looks exactly the same. How are people going to know that I'm better than them? Biggest disappointment of my life.
Big Bad Wolf.
Listen, you are in the 99 percentile of the wealthiest 1%. You need to make more. Yes, everybody has a mortgage. It's called good debt. That's why some people have two. Always name brands. They got the name brand for a reason. If you don't put the Apple decal on your car, how will anyone know you bought the computer? No, 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 no. Your 529 can wait. Rent to own. Student loans are cheap now. You can pay for it down the road. Stay at home, mom. Like the 50s? You mean like stay at home, mom?
Big Bad Wolf.
Didn't Jesus always say you'll always have poor people? Lighten up, go buy some Madden 2012. Everyone's in debt after Christmas, so relax. You think the wise men paid cash for that crap? The library! Yeah, I use the library. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know this call was from Little House on the Prairie. What do you mean you don't have a TV in your bedroom? Listen, if I gave a buck to every bum I saw on the street, bums would go extinct and there'd be none for our grandkids to ignore. Yes, supersize, always the right choice. A family with one car. What? A single family car? One car? Is the family one person? Are you a family yourself? Are you referring to yourself in the plural?
Big Bad Wolf.
You know, a lot of us think, that's all I need in life. I just need $1 million or another $1 million. Who would like $1 million or another $1 million? I would. Wonderful. Nothing wrong with that. That'd be great. But what we're learning in this series is that money is trying to always tell us that the solution to everything that's wrong in our life is more money, more of it. And God wants to do for us what money promises, but money actually can't do. That is to give us an identity, to give us a relationship with God, to give us real security that lasts throughout eternity. And so today we're going to cap off this whole series on the wolf, looking at some continual practical ways to be encouraged at how God meets us and how we can have a life of value. So let's pray before we go any further. Father, thank you for everybody who is here today, and I pray that the sacrifices that were made to be here would not be forgotten. Everyone in here right now could be somewhere else doing something else, but they're here today, we're here today, because we'd like to change, we'd like to grow, we'd like to understand your character, we'd like to even change our character. So I pray that you would notice those who have sacrificed to be here and you would take us to new places. Help us to rest in your identity and not be afraid of the big bad wolf. And I pray these things in your character, the name of Jesus. Amen. Well, our last week here, and I want to do two things. I want us to hone in on the faithful character of God, and I also want us to hone in to actual practical things that we're going to do coming out of here. You know, in the Bible, there's two big themes that come up over and over and again. One is the faithfulness of God, how God would regularly meet the needs of his people. Another theme is God giving practical instruction as to how to make life work. One of the test markets of both of these principles was the nation of Israel. God calls a people group unto himself, and he exhibits his faithfulness to them, and he also gives them instructions. The nation of Israel was in bondage, the nation of Egypt in slavery, and Moses, also known as Charlton Heston, leads them out of slavery into freedom. And some really weird things that happened there. One is God tells the Israelites, go to the Egyptian's house, and on your way out, just take all their jewelry, take all their silver, take all their fine clothes. God delivers them these amazing things that really have no practical purpose. What does jewelry do? They're going to be out in the middle of the wilderness for years and years and years and years. They're not going to be having high-class balls out for charity events out in the wilderness. They're not going to be able to use it as a form of currency. It's as if God is saying, I'm going to meet your needs, but I'm also going to exceed that and just give you nice things for the point of having nice things. And then they go out and they're in the midst of the wilderness and they're wandering around and they have not been able to bring hordes of food with them. They don't have portable pantries or any such thing. And so God would miraculously provide for them. At night for dinner, he would drop quail out of the sky and they would have quail to eat. And then they would go to bed having no stores of provision, having no awareness of where their food the next day was going to come from. They were what is known today as being food scared. Being food scared is when you just had a meal, but you're scared because you're not sure exactly where the next one's going to come from. And an unfortunate increasing amount of Americans are becoming food scared. They were food scared every single day, which actually God was using. Why was he using this? He was using this to pull them into dependence to him. Most of us, we want independence. We want to be independent. We want to be in and of our own selves, not relying on our friends, not relying on God. We want to have our resources unto ourselves. But spiritual maturity, reliance on God, happens when we are in dependence, when we are dependent on God. And so they would go to bed, and God would say, I'm going to cause manna to fall from the sky while you're sleeping. It's going to be dew like from heaven. It's going to cover the ground, and you're going to be able to eat as much as you want the next day. Here's how he explains it to him in the book of Exodus. This is what the Lord has commanded. Gather of it, each one of you, as much as he can eat. You shall each take an omer. It's a leaf that could hold about 2 liters of matter, according to the number of the persons that each of you has in his tent. And the people of Israel did so. They gathered some more, some less. But when they measured it with an omer, whoever gathered much had nothing left over, and whoever gathered little had no lack. Each of them gathered as much as he could eat. And Moses said to them, let no one leave any of it over till morning, but they did not listen to Moses. Some left part of it till the morning and bred worms, and it stank. And Moses was angry with them. Morning by morning they gathered it, each as much as he could eat, but when the sun grew hot, it melted. This is really, really amazing. God is trying to teach them dependence by giving them just enough for every day. If they tried to hoard it, tried to save it so they would have all their plans settled for the future, it would rot, it would go into worms. And God did this for years. Could you imagine how dependent on God you would be, how aware of his faithfulness you would be, how thankful for him you would be if every day you saw him show up? You know, that's what many of us are seeing right now. Right now, you're going, I don't know how I can make it through another month, and you made it last month and the month before. Sometimes God goes through long periods of time where we don't have jewelry, or if we do have jewelry, it's not really helping us in our immediate moments. And this is how God builds our spiritual strength, by living in faithfulness to him. And I want to encourage us, many of us have been having manna from God dropping into our lives, and you need to understand that's from the very faithful, gracious hand of God. And how do we know this? We know this by learning it from other people. In the New Testament, the book of Hebrews, chapter 10, verse 23 and following, which really talks about how things in the Hebrew nation, how they apply to everybody who's in relation with God today, it says this, let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who has promised is faithful. And let us consider how to stir one another up to love and good deeds, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another. This is what happens with everyone who's here today. You gathered together. You walked in here today to be encouraged. You didn't walk in here today going, man, I need some bad news. I need to get bummed out. I need to go to church today. That happens sometimes when you go to church, but everyone came here because you want encouraged. You need a little jolt. And this is why people gather in churches, whether it's in Oakley, Mason, other kinds of churches all over the city. We gather together to remember the faithfulness of God and to have each other, one another, build into us to stir us up to love and encourage us to change our life and look to God as we go forward. So for the rest of our time today, we're going to bring other normal people from Crossroads up here on stage, and they're going to encourage us. They're going to stir something up in us. Chuck and I have talked about the wolf, and we feel like at this point it's time to hear from some people who aren't on staff at a church, who have more normal jobs, and you're in for a treat today, so let's be encouraging to them as they sort of open up their hearts to us. And our first one, let's please welcome Teresa.
Hello, everybody. I'm Teresa, and I'd like to share a little snapshot of my journey with money with you guys, but before I do so, I just really want to encourage you to persevere. Wherever you're at, continue persevering, and here's why. I learned a little bit about this when my husband and I first got married. We entered into marriage and we're like, this is wonderful, marital bliss. And then reality set in a couple months later. And for us, reality looked like focusing on our debt. We realized that together we had a lot of debt. What did that look like? Well, we were paying $800 a month in minimum payments. We didn't really want that to continue because if we took that into our marriage further, it'd be kind of rough. So we started a plan. We thought, okay, so step one, why don't we live off of one salary? Okay, so we lived off of his salary. We'd pay debt with my salary. Step two, why don't we just live on cash? Okay, so we decided we'd gather a lot of envelopes together and make that like our organizational system for bucketing our cash. So we would write down all of the expenses that we had in a month and then put cash equal amounts into there. And as if that wasn't hard enough, because really when you go to Kroger and pull out a wad of envelopes, they look at you kind of weird. So I got over that. But we wanted to make it more challenging and say, let's do this in a time frame. So we decided, let's do this in 2 years. That's what we put on ourselves. So we started out, and we wanted to pay off the smallest loan first. That was his car loan, because we knew if we could do that, then maybe it would give us hope to keep going. And we did. We were able to pay a little bit above the minimum payment on the car loan, and then we just took that whole chunk of money that we were dumping towards that once it was paid off and rolled it over into the next loan that we had. And we did this for month after month, and so we didn't really have any surplus. Once one loan was done, it rolled right into the next loan. And this lasted for about a year and a half, and we were really feeling pretty good about it. We had one large loan left, and that was my undergrad loan. And if you know how school loans look, they're kind of huge, so we left that for the last bit. So we felt like we were so close to freedom. We had made it this far. And then I lost my job. And then it was we were really living on one income. And I was frustrated at that point. We lost our momentum. We were just like, how are we going to get through this? And I was very aware of how small we were living. We'd been living in a 650 square foot apartment the whole time. It didn't really bother me. But at this point, when I didn't have a job, I felt like I was living in a shoebox. And I swore we were the only people without cable, so we couldn't really talk pop culture. And I definitely knew that we were the only family in Cincinnati without a giant flat screen, and that bummed me out. And I wanted to buy stuff, and I couldn't. So my husband came alongside, and he just said, hey, we're going to get through this. And he said, take your time finding a job, and in the meantime, we'll just pay our minimum payment on your school loan. And that's what we did. So this carried out for about 6 months. And finally, I landed a great job, and 2 weeks later, a great paycheck hit our checking account. It sat there for about 5 minutes and went right back into paying my student loan off. And so we did this for a few months, and then it took us about 2.5 years total. But this month, we have successfully paid off $47,000 of debt. We are debt-free. So persevere.
Hi there. My name is Derek. I actually want to encourage you today to find freedom in your financial status. And so that means if you're in a season right now of being blessed, find freedom in that. If you're in a season where you need to be blessed, you can find freedom in that as well. And so my story really starts. My wife and I got married. We were coming from two different financial backgrounds. I was very stingy, was very gracious and generous. And that didn't mesh initially real well, except for there were two things that we knew that we wanted to do. We knew that we wanted to tithe and that we wanted to live below our means. And so we set up our budget and process in place to make sure that we were able to live below our means, because we did not want the financial stress that we had seen in our homes growing up. And so both families of ours were constantly either in debt or wondering kind of what is that next dollar going to be able to afford where we need to be. And we knew that was a stress that we didn't want on our marriage and on our family when we were to have one. And so what we did is we actually invited God into our finances, and we established the password Matthew 6, and we utilized that as our bank account password, so that every time we would log into our bank account, we would be reminded that we're supposed to be building up our treasures in heaven instead of treasures on earth. And what it did is it really invited God into our finances and into our lives in a way that was more meaningful. Then, a couple years into our marriage, we had, you know, a decent amount of savings. We were able to actually buy a new car, and so we did. And my wife felt called at that time to give our old car at half the value of the car away to a neighbor that needed one. And so she was like, hey, we should do this. I was, I don't know. We just bought a new car. We could use that money to put back into our savings to replenish what we had just spent. Eventually, we gave it away. And what that did is that created a ton of freedom, from having to accumulate wealth and needing to kind of save as much as possible. And it set off a pattern in our lives of, for the next 7 years up until today, of being able to give away. And so we've been very active at looking at, you know, the folks around us for opportunities where we could bless others to help them experience a little bit of the financial freedom that we've experienced. Then, with Game Change, they talked in Luke 12, where it talks about the rich young fool that was going to tear down his barn to build bigger barns so that he could store more wealth. And we felt extremely challenged by that. And what that meant is, within the Game Change, we decided that we would give up a significant chunk of our savings, get down to just what we needed for an emergency fund and kind of the day-to-day expenses. And beyond that, we also wanted to cut our day-to-day expenses because we wanted to feel that sacrificial giving to make sure that we were giving in a way where we would feel that giving on a day-to-day basis. So we gave up cable, we reduced our clothing and dining budgets, as well as I had been promoted into a new job, and for the first time in my adult life, I'd gotten a bonus. And we committed that bonus as part of our Game Change, not only for that 1 year, but for the full 3 years of the commitment, because we, again, wanted to invite God into our finances and to be that most important, not only at work, but also within our money. And so we did that. Then lo and behold, after we wrote a few of those checks and had given away the savings, we actually experienced a few unexpected expenses. One of those being that we had water in our basement, which was our main living space at the time. And so we had a party over Thanksgiving, and we tore out the basement. And so a few folks from the small group and our friends came over, tore out the basement, had a significant expense that we had to put into that, reducing the amount that we thought we would have and reducing us to kind of cut our budget even further and kind of start living for the first time a little bit closer to paycheck to paycheck. But what we found through that is there was a lot of freedom from that. God was faithful to us as we were being faithful to him in that commitment. And what that looked like is we started seeing a bunch of blessings that were unexpected and started to make a list of those so that we could remember and kind of pray about, okay, God being faithful to us and driving freedom, knowing that, you know, it's kind of a humbling experience when you make a good salary that you've been able to live on kind of stress-free for a long time, but now you have to be reliant. And so we were reliant on community around us to help us. And there were two friends in particular that really stepped up and knew a little bit about our financial situation, but didn't know a lot of the details. And they independently just kind of came and they gave us gifts. And they were substantial gifts of money, saying that what they had experienced by watching us give generously to others, they felt like we were in a season where they could give back to us. And that humbling receiving is actually one of the things where God proved his faithfulness to us and helped provide us freedom in the receiving side. So we'd already experienced what that freedom looks like to be able to give and bless others. And now we are in a season of being able to receive that freedom by being blessed. And so as you think about your financial situation, wherever you are, you can find freedom in that. Thank you.
Hey everyone, just want to encourage you all to be completely trusting of God and just go all in on God. And so I also would like to encourage you to give me a little bit of grace up here as I attempt to public speak up here, so be great. And before I get started, I just want to confess, my name is David and I'm a wolfaholic. Until recently, I was consumed by money and everything that came with it. Big houses, fast cars, fancy job titles, you name it, I wanted it. Growing up, I was surrounded by all these things. My parents had it, my friends' parents had it, my grandparents had it, even I had it. At 16, I had a six-figure bank account. Fast forward a few years, my life changed dramatically. I got married, had a kid, bought a house, bought a car, paid off our school loans, and before you knew it, the money ran out and it was gone. For the first time in my life, my safety net was pulled out from under me, and I was scared. And so I selfishly turned and cried to God out my fear. And what did God do? I mean, did he respond by abandoning me or forsaking me? No, he just did quite the opposite. God proved how awesome and how lavish he truly is. 1 month we were going to be short on the mortgage and not knowing what else to do, my wife and I humbly and literally got down on our knees and prayed and cried out to God to help us in our time of need. A couple minutes later, it was less than five, the phone rang, and my wife starts crying even more. I was like, great, how could this get any worse? And she says, it was my dad. I was like, well, what'd he want? He said that God put it on his heart to call us and give us money. He said, how much do you need? Needless to say, we were both blown away and the mortgage got paid. Other times we were blessed financially by friends who wanted to give us gifts, and we've even had an envelope of a significant amount of cash left anonymously in our mailbox at just the time when we needed it most. I tasted God's sweetness and I wanted more of it. I no longer wanted to chase the wolf, I wanted to chase the Lord. God began to author my life in a new direction, one towards obedience and total dependence on Him for just enough. From the world's perspective, I am financially poor, but from a kingdom perspective, I've been blessed abundantly. The Bible tells us in James 1:17 that everything that we have is from Him. Every good and gift, every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to the change. As I look at my house and everything I have within it, I can honestly say that I'm living testimony to this truth. Not only have I gotten to read about His faithfulness in a book, but I've learned firsthand from that experience that I've grown to depend on that truth. God has completely transformed me from being a slave to the world to now being completely set free in His Son, Jesus Christ. My hope is no longer in a bank account, but in Him alone. And after experiencing both extremes from the financial perspective, from having a crazy amount of money as a teenager, to now having next to nothing, depending on God just to get by, I've experienced this one truth, and I've learned that I want to just pass on to you. If you guys remember one thing, I want you to take this away, that God's lavish love and His faithfulness are more abundant and more richly filling than anything else that this world has to offer or anything else that money has to buy. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Latasha, and I want to encourage you to speak financial truth to your children. I remember growing up in a house where my dad was very good with money, still is very good with money, but he never talked to us about it. As a matter of fact, the only conversation I really remember having with my dad about money is when he dropped me off at college. He rolled down the window and he said, hey, don't forget, don't get a credit card. And I said, okay, Dad. And so as soon as he left and got on the plane, I went upstairs, folded up my clothes, went back down on the quad, and of course applied for a credit card. And 30 days later, I was completely maxed out on that particular credit card. So I'm like, man, I got to call my dad and, you know, let him know. And so I had to call and have that conversation. And again, there was not really a lot of conversation that we had. He was just like, oh, okay. And then the next thing you know, he had paid off the credit card. So I was kind of on my own just in dealing with money as a young adult and growing into an old adult or older adult. And just kind of had lots of trials and errors. And fast forward, I have this child, and I am on my way to her kindergarten parent-teacher conference, and I am expecting to hear that my kid is like this genius and she is going to get promoted like to the third grade. And I hear instead that my kid can't count money. And I'm like, what do you mean my kid can't count money? How's that possible? That's crazy. Of course she can count money. Well, she didn't know what a dime or a nickel or a penny looked like. She had never seen one before. I thought, that's crazy. I wonder why. I open up my wallet and I see no money. I see plastic. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, I'm doing the same thing with my kid that my dad did with me. And I wanted it to stop. And so the thing that I did is that very day, my daughter and I both got bank accounts here in Cincinnati. She got one, I got one. And every birthday gift and every Christmas gift and any other gift that she got, we had very specific and intentional places and things that she could do with it. So she had to save, she could give, she had to give away, and she could spend. She did a lot of saving and giving away, but she never spent her money. And so like 5 years later now, she's amassed a pretty decent chunk of change for a, you know, 10-year-old in a bank account. And she comes to me a couple of months ago and says, hey, Mom, I have this opportunity to go to Mexico with my school as a foreign exchange student. I thought, oh, okay, great. She says, well, can I go? Will you pay for it? And I'm thinking, you know what? This little girl likes the finer things. So this year it's Mexico, next year it's Paris, and I'll just be stroking checks, you know, the whole time paying for this, and we cannot do this. So I told her that she could go to Mexico if she was willing to put some of the money that she had saved towards that trip, and then I would help match, and she'd have to work for the rest, right? Letters to her friends and family. And she did. She thought, you know, in theory, this is okay. But I really wanted her to understand and feel what this, understand and, you know, just really understand what this felt like. And so when we went to the bank, I wouldn't let her get a cashier's check. I made her withdraw the money in tins so she could smell and feel and touch and taste this money. And then I still made her, when she went to take her deposit over to her teacher, she had to hand the money over in a big old wad of cash to her teacher. And she held on to it for a little bit too long. Like, we had to pry it out of her hands. Like, that's how I would feel, right? And but she did. She finally let go of the money, and I helped her pay for the rest of her trip. And I was super excited to go on that journey with her. I'm hoping that we have broken kind of this cycle of not talking about money in our lives, and that she grows up to be a very responsible young adult as it relates to money. And I know that you guys can do that too with your kids. So thank you.
Hello, my name is Jeff Hierman. I'm here to encourage you to allow God into your financial planning. I married my beautiful wife, Stephanie, when we were 19. Pleased to say that 18 years later, we're still going strong. Thank you. But the mistake we made early on was allowing the big bad wolf as a part of our relationship. Being that young, we were attending school full-time, we were working part-time, and we allowed the big bad wolf to convince us that we deserved to live the same way we had when our parents were paying our bills. So that meant we could go on shopping sprees for clothing. If we go out to eat, we could have appetizers and we could get drinks. And we were free to do that. We just put it on the credit card. Doing that for a few years, living that lifestyle, we managed to amass $40,000 in credit card debt. Which, worse than actually standing up here and telling you that, is the feelings that you have while you're going through that. There's shame with it of what my parents think or what my friends think. There's a feeling of, how can we let this happen? We're both business majors. We understand finance. but even worse is just kind of that hopelessness of, how are we ever going to get out of this short of winning the lottery? So my way of handling it was I would close my eyes to it, and I would let my wife handle it. She did a great job. She'd make the minimum payments. She would transfer balances to low interest cards. And from time to time, we would talk about it, and she'd tell me where we were at. And my response would be, I'd get mad. I'd be like, how could we be so stupid? We need to fix it. Let's come up with a plan. We're going to get engaged. We're going to take care of this debt. And as soon as we came up with that plan and worked it for a short time, I'd fall back and disengaging and let her handle it. Hindsight, I realized how unfair and how disrespectful I was being to my wife by doing that. So we'd begin to attend Crossroads. We started here the first year, and we were really growing in our faith, and we knew we wanted to become more God-focused and less us-focused as we had been living. And from time to time, we would donate money. We'd kind of give what we had in our pockets or just give a little bit here and there. But we were coming up on the first building campaign, and we decided, okay, this is our chance to step it up. So we talked about it, and we came up with a safe number that we thought we could do. It's a three-year commitment. We could handle this safe number for 3 years. Then we got to that night, and rather than the excitement that we expected to feel as everything's going on, I sit there with a pit in my stomach of just hearing this, you should do more. And not convinced that, okay, this is God trying to tell me this. Maybe I'm wrapped up in the moment or whatever. We have a plan. We're going to stick with it. As the night went on, my wife tells me, I think we need to do more. To me, it wasn't a coincidence. To me, that was confirmation of what I was hearing from God earlier in the evening. So we decided that night, we were going to step up. We were going to give 10% of our income, do the biblical tithe. And it's just a ridiculous thing when you owe that much money. If we committed that amount of money to a credit card company, we could make a substantial debt in what we owed. But we decided to proceed with it. Proud to say that we did meet our commitment to Crossroads doing that tithe for those 3 years. And during that time, we were paying off debts. We made smarter decisions. Going shopping was no longer a hobby for us. If we choose to go out to eat, we would just be a meal, no more drinks and appetizers, things like that, and just put better practices into place. And pleased to say we did get that debt paid off, even though we had additional financial hardships during that time in addition to that debt. So we have gotten that taken care of, but we will never forget, and we're glad that we did take that step to be part of God's kingdom and follow His ways rather than the ways of the wolf. Thank you.
My name is Tom Shepherd, and my story is about wealth. You know the great thing about wealth? It's the money. With it, we can buy nice things and do fun stuff. But that's not the best thing. The best is the power wealth has to change the world. I am a wealthy man. I'm the 1%. I'm here to encourage you to make lots of money and use it to change the world. My source of wealth is a company started by my great-grandfather back in 1916. I joined the company straight out of college in 1986 and proceeded to rocket up through the ranks as only a family member can. I found myself 8 years into it in charge of operations. I was in way over my head and scrambling to keep up. So I was reading lots of business books. One that was especially influential was Built to Last, Successful Habits of Visionary Companies. In Built to Last, the authors contend that one of the distinguishing characteristics of enduringly great companies is they know very clearly why they exist. They know very clearly what difference they make in this world, and they submit everything they do to that core purpose. So I set out to identify our core purpose. I set out to understand why we exist. Some with whom I spoke suggested the reason we exist is to make a lot of money. Others suggested that our core purpose is simply to survive. And while each of these is important and each speaks some truth, they felt incomplete to me. Then one evening, I'm driving home from work down I-75, listening to a sermon on tape, when suddenly it all became very clear. I understood at that moment that the reason our company exists is to bless people. Not just by being a great place to work, although certainly that. Not just to provide world-class customer satisfaction, but certainly that. And not just to have a positive impact on health, safety, the environment, and the communities in which we work, but certainly that. But also, we exist to make lots of money. First, so that we can keep the whole thing running. And second, so that we can make a difference in this world. So each day we show up to work to bless those on whom our work has an impact. Each day we work to bless our coworkers. Each day we work to bless our customers. And each day we work to bless our community. And each day we work to make lots of money. First, so that we can plow it back into the company and show up the next day and do it all over again. Second, so we can finance those who are making a difference in our world. And third, with those things taken care of, so that we can buy nice things and do fun stuff. In this, I believe, we honor God. In this, we keep the wolf at bay. Thanks.
Hello, my name is Patrick Busher, and I want to encourage you to allow God to pursue relationship with you through the provision he provides. My wife and I, we got married in 2008, and shortly after we got married, we started to realize some of the gifts we brought into our marriage. Hers was definitely a fear around money and making ends meet and making sure we have a safety net. My gift I brought to her was debt. So this is how we started. Shortly after we got married, my wife, she came to me and she said, I want to do something bigger. I'm going to apply to nursing school. I said, wonderful. I kind of forgot that she applied to nursing school, and 9 months later, she finally received an acceptance letter. She received it on March 16th, 2009. I know this day because it was the same day we closed on our house. We had both accepted a mortgage for more money than we knew, you know, we would ever be able to come up with, and her not working for 2 years. She worked a little bit on the weekends, and we knew that would be part of the solution, but we didn't know any of the other solutions. We talked about it, and it was all on our own efforts. Our solutions were liquidating some savings, me picking up side work, other things like that, and school loans. But it wasn't God. He was not at all part of it. But we didn't know God was going to chase us down to show that he was going to provide. Shortly after she had begun school and money was getting tight, we would talk, and I would say, babe, I really think we need to tithe. And she thought that was ridiculous, and I was not looking at it with any joy. The reason my wife thought it was ridiculous wasn't that she didn't trust God, it was just that she thought God would rather us be responsible with our finances and pay off our debt and build a safety net and stuff like that first. So we chose not to. Game Change campaign came around the corner, and for me, that was a really, really, really hard time at work. It was some of the most stress I've had, and I was not engaged at all, but she was. I had no idea how she was being engaged by God in this. She came to me on campaign commitment night, and she said, I think this is what God wants us to do. And I was startled. I mean, it was more than I ever imagined. It meant we were going to tithe. So I submitted to that, and that's what we did. We chose that we were going to commit for 3 years to tithing, and that we were going to just rely on God to make that happen, because there was no way, while she was in school, and while I do not make a large income, that we would be able to make ends meet. But we did. And it's only through God's provision that occurred. We had things happen that some of it seems coincidental, but I would definitely say that God was there. At one point I received a envelope in my mailbox, and it said, Patrick, I love you, signed Jesus. And there was $1,000 in it. And this was a time when the budget was really tight. We didn't have money. And that just made ends meet. But God pursued us in ways outside of money. He pursued us by providing things, too. Things that we didn't know were at all part of his plan for us. Someone gave us a hot tub. And I didn't know what to think about that. But my wife, she's studying so hard for 2 years. I never got to talk to her. So we finally got to sit in a hot tub together and talk. She couldn't study, the book would get wet. So we got to finally talk while she was in school. And that transformed not only into building our marriage, but us talking about how God works in our lives. We got to talk about how God provides, how we're growing in relationship with him. And he pursued us by providing something to build our marriage. And in the end, to build our marriage closer to his vision for what our marriage should look like. So I encourage you to allow God to pursue relationship with you just through his provision. Thank you.
Thanks for the weekend, man. Thank you.
In the hot tub, talking. Yes. And get me some talking. Yes. Wonderful. I love that story. I love all those stories. Let's give all those people a great, amazing round of applause again. Amazing. all different walks of life, all different teachings, all different experiences, and it's just so good to hear how God is uniquely working in somebody's life. And you notice throughout that whole thing, there was two things that seemed to come up in everybody's story. There was the sense of extravagance, whether it's a hot tub or just pure wealth or something like that, relative to the Israelites' jewelry. Then there was just the manna. Man, money just showed up, or God just taught me how to rely on him. I mean, you talk to anybody who has got God in the right place and the wolf in the lower place, and those stories come up. So, last scripture we'll share with you for this entire series. It comes from the book of James. Here's what it says. Be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. And so it doesn't matter what you hear. A lot of people think that spirituality is all about hearing cool concepts, singing neat songs. No, no, that's just hearing. God wants you to be about doing. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he's like a man who looks intently at his natural face in a mirror, looking to put some product on his hair, for he looks at himself and goes away at once and forgets what it looks like. Coming to an environment like this and hearing interesting concepts while going out and nothing changing is like making a trip to the mirror and then doing nothing when you look in the mirror. What's the point of a mirror? The point of a mirror is I look at something and I do something differently. I brush my teeth. I change my hair. I pop a zit. That's the whole point of a mirror. So we've done 4 weeks. We've had a lot of great comments on this financial series. I've been really surprised that this has been a fun series, that we've not really felt this ominous, oh, no, no. I've heard a lot of good comments. I'm glad we have. And you should have right now, walking out of here, something tangible and tactile you're going to do. If you've been here the last 4 weeks and there's nothing that is going to change about your financial life, you have wasted your life. You have wasted your time. You may as well not have come. God is not impressed with you going to church 4 weeks in a row. He's not impressed with you coming for 65 minutes. He's impressed when a hearer becomes a doer. If there's not something substantively and significantly different about the way you view and handle money, friends, that's a lost opportunity. Once you pull out right now your PDA, your iPod, iPhone, iPad, your Android smartphone, your program, a pen, your hand to mark something on it, I'm going to give you a minute to write down at least one thing that you are going to be doing differently. I don't know what it is. I'll just seed you with some ideas. Some ideas could be I'm going to give away a percentage, a set preset percentage of my income. I'm going to automatically save a certain percentage. Maybe you're married and you're realizing you're operating in different camps with different checking accounts and it keeps you from fighting and actually bonding with money. Maybe you're going to go to a common checkbook. Maybe there's somebody in your life you realize, I need to just somehow step up with this person. Maybe there's a possession you have that you're going to sell. Maybe there's a possession that you feel like you shouldn't have, but God's going to say, no, go ahead and buy that thing. I don't know what it is. I promise you, God has not had you be here, so you just have different concepts. He wants you to do something. So I'm giving you a minute right now. God, in all spiritual sobriety, speak to us this minute as we write down what we are committed to do. Man, some of your dues could be even, I'm going to work harder and earn more money in the prime income earning days of my life. Any number of things. Why don't we stand right now? Let's stand. And we're going to make these songs things that we say to ourselves, things that we say to God. Whether you're financially strong, financially weak, we want to say to God, you're enough, and I want you more than I want the wolf, and help me to actually do these things that I've been hearing about.